Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. It's going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
I'll start. My name is Rod. And I like to party.
So you mean whiskey?
What?
You're saying it weird.
Saying what weird?
All of it.
Where do you get off?
Hey there, church planners, and all you other people who love this podcast. We know there's lots of you. Thank you so much for listening. I was just looking at our metrics, Matt, from the last year, and since we relaunched the end of March in 2023, there's been 29,000 downloads.
Wow, that's wild.
That's crazy. I don't know who these people are or who the bots are that are downloading this, but, right. But thanks for being out there.
Absolutely. The server if farm somewhere in Indonesia.
If you're real, please send us an Instagram message with a picture of you typing so we know you're real.
You're now soliciting Instagram messages. That's a dangerous game.
DMs. DM me. No, don't do that. Well, welcome to the show today. We're back. Had a little interview last week, and hopefully you enjoyed that interview with Mr. Preston Sprinkle. I know that I did. That guy is amazing. So, Matt, how you doing, man?
Doing well. I'm enjoying the day. It's nice we record these in the middle of my work day, so it's nice to kind of steal away for a little bit and get to do something fun like this. So yeah, it's been a fun day.
Do you think at one point your boss is gonna find the podcast and be like, "Is this what you do on Monday afternoons?"
He knows. I told him. I feel good about the transparency. I also started my workday this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning. So,
oh my gosh, do you do that normally?
I like to. I'm so productive from 4 to 7 or 8, like 100 times more productive than I could. The amount of work that I get done from 4, like honestly, most days it'd be like 6 to 8. The amount of work I get done there is like 3 times as much as I get done from 3 to 5. So,
I like to get started earlier already for the day.
No, I'll probably go back and just kind of check back in and make sure things are good. But I was up with our pup Luna, letting her out, and then I just kind of decided to stay up and start working. So,
all right. Well, I can see it. I can see it in your eyes, but I'm glad you're here.
I'll get a Diet Coke shortly.
Well, I mean, there's only one piece of smack talk I want to talk about today.
And that is your
pitcher who is obviously gambling and wants to hide it. We need to talk about this.
This is what we need to talk about. That's great.
I want you to explain to me what Shohei Ohtani is doing and why.
He doesn't speak English. It's very hard in this country to be a professional athlete who doesn't speak the language of the natives. Is what's happening. He's got this translator who's obviously a bad seed, and he's not translating accurately what's being said in meetings, and it's just it's an unfortunate situation for him to be in. So
okay, so
that's what happened.
You're just assuming that he is a simpleton who isn't capable of managing himself or his money. Is that what you're telling me?
I would say this, that that many professional athletes are not capable of managing their money. That's just a baseline. Most professional athletes, I would argue to say, are not great managers of their money. And I would say probably most of them don't actually manage their money. So, when you've got that much money, $4 million going missing, like that'd be like the equivalent of like, I accidentally got charged $6 twice at Winco. I don't catch those.
See this, I think this all happened before he even got the first payday for his new contract though.
He's been making endorsement money for the last 4 years for
crazy.
There's a reason that he can take a $2 million contract this year is because he's still going to make $25 million in endorsements and revenue.
So let's pull back for those of you who aren't baseball fans or maybe don't know the story. What's happened is Shohei Ohtani, there was some discrepancy where $4.5 million was wire transferred in $500,000 increments from his bank account to a illegal bookmaker, i.e. a gambling operation in Southern California. And what he has said is that his interpreter stole the money from him. I don't know if you've ever made a wire transfer in your life, but it actually takes like two or three trips to the bank to identify yourself just to make them actually send a wire transfer. It's one of the most difficult financial transactions you can make in the world is getting a wire transfer because it is you initiating a transfer out of your account. It's like getting cash at the bank. You have to be you. There's no other way to do it. That's clear. And apparently then his interpreter made a statement saying that he was so thankful that Shohei Ohtani generously decided to pay off his illegal gambling debts that he had taken on. And
that's not the original story.
No, what's the original?
The original story was that he accrued the gambling debts and that he came to Shohei and said, "Hey, I'm in a really bad spot. I have a bunch of debt." And Shohei said, "I'll pay them for you." And listen, I'm all about being transparent with this. And then he came back the next day and said, "That was a lie. I actually never told Shohei that he was paying my gambling debts. I basically embezzled this money from Shohei to pay my debts."
Uh-huh. There is a lot of question marks here. And anytime you have a significant athlete sending money to a bookmaker, no matter what they're gambling on, it's questionable because of obvious conflicts of interest for somebody who is playing a game that people bet upon, i.e. Pete Rose, who should be in the Hall of Fame, but because he bet on one baseball game that he was not a part of, he lost his chance in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I've got serious questions. I'm not a hater. I think Shohei Ohtani is probably the greatest baseball player that I will ever see live, period. I think if he had played his entire career in the U.S., I think he would break almost every record in terms of batting. And then also as a pitcher, the guy is lights out. So I'm not a hater. It's not like LeBron where I would, like if this came out about LeBron, I'd be all over him. But So, I mean, it really does. Like the worst part about this for a Dodgers fan, just to summarize your pain, is to say it takes a bit of the luster off of opening day, right? Like this is perfectly timed to take away from opening day.
Opening day happened and we won. It was great.
Not open. Opening day doesn't happen until next week, man.
Yeah, but we played our first official game last week in Seoul against the
Padres. Was that an official game? I thought
those were real games.
Exhibition. Oh, I thought those were exhibition games.
It was. It very much confused me.
Yeah, because it's like a week early. Yeah.
But and then American opening day is the 28th. And so for a day, we were infinitely ahead of everyone else. And now we're tied with the Padres atop the top of the major leagues.
Atop of the National League West.
Well, both. So, so no, I will say this. It doesn't take anything away from opening day because there's still a lot to come out, obviously. And a lot is going to come out. You just can't brush that kind of stuff under the rug. And so I will withhold my judgments until more information comes out. Because like right now, I mean, benefit of the doubt, he is a super private person who doesn't like to be out in the public. And there's like a lot, there's, I mean, just a lot of weird stuff there. And if it comes out that he was betting on sports, that's very different than if it comes out that he was betting on baseball. If he had $4.5 million in gambling debt, then, you know, that's not a great look, but I'm just going to reserve that judgment. But he's, I mean, until the Major League says, hey, we're going to suspend him for something, I'm not concerned.
No, I don't think we should throw any shade on Ohtani, but I do think that from a PR standpoint, it's a nightmare.
It was the weirdest, like,
because of the way it's rolling out. Just tell the truth. Like, don't try to hide it.
Yeah. So, and he like got secret married. He's just like a private guy. Like
he got married too.
He got married, but nobody really knew that he was dating.
Like a Russian mail order bride sort of.
No, thing? Like he married a member of the women's Japanese basketball team.
Oh.
Yeah, but like there wasn't a lot there, and then they're like when he was. His dog, like nobody knew his dog's name for a while. He's just a really super private guy. So like that in itself is just like, I mean, I wouldn't put it past him that like, hey, he was gambling and probably not on baseball. I don't think that's the case. I mean, if he was, that's a bad, bad, bad look. But, and he just wanted to kind of like have this be a private thing. And then all of a sudden it's coming out. I get that would not be ideal, but it's very different. Yeah. So I mean, I'm waiting until.
And he probably, like, Japanese media culture is very different than U.S. media culture. It is not as in your face as what we have here. So, well, I guess we'll see. We'll see. All that to say, we should probably move on to this week's topic because we don't have a ton of time today.
So that's great. Sure, let's do it. Jump in. I'm excited. The last 2 weeks, I felt like I was an observer and a questioner. I feel like I can engage in this topic a little more because that's something I'm more familiar with, and especially in our ministry.
You're the star, man.
I thought about wearing my Maddie Buckets costume, but I didn't have all the stuff.
I might try to find some videos from old Maddie Buckets.
Oh, great. Like, throw them in there.
Oh, okay. So today it's time for this week's topic. Welcome. In case you just scrub forward to this moment, thank you for joining us. After
check the show notes for when to get past Smack Talk.
Hey,
it's not a great thing to say 8 minutes, 10 minutes into this.
Zoom summary. Please mark this spot as the beginning of the show. okay, so this week's topic is missional outreach, and what we're talking about when we talk about missional outreach. There's two ways that people think about helping people connect with church, especially when you're church planting. The first is, and I think this is how most people think about it, it's an attractional model built on promotion and built on a come and see mentality. And that's a more of a marketing sort of view where you say, come to our thing, come to our service, come to our place that we've made and enjoy this space. That's an attractional sort of ministry model that says, Sunday's the show, come be a part of this thing. And there's a place for that. There's people who are looking to connect with spiritual communities, and if you're close to them, you need to be in a space where you can be discovered. That's not a problem. That's a real thing. And you need to make sure, you know, we should probably do a series on like digital outreach and website and all those things as well. Yeah. But just as a starting point, That's like one way. The second way is a missional sort of outreach. What does it mean to be missional? It means that we go as missionaries, as sent ones. That's what missio means, is the ones who are sent. So missionaries are the ones who are sent. So a missional outreach is us going to the place where people are so that they can discover life with God and connect in community with God's people. So missional outreach is ideas that you have about how to get in front of people who aren't going to show up at a church gathering. And that's a lot of people. A lot of people are not looking to show up at a Sunday morning gathering. Either they've gone and didn't find it compelling, they've gone and found it something they rejected, or they don't even know why it would be valuable or why they would want to show up because it culturally doesn't make sense to them. So we have to be the people who get out there and show people how to walk with God in the space where they are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the overall topic. And I want to talk about a few ideas that we've used and that we've experienced and seen other church communities do. And then we're going to talk about one that we've found really compelling that's helped our church plant here in Boise called Redemption Hill. And something that's also helped, I think almost 100 churches have used it across the country, and you're free to use it as well. So let's talk missional outreach. Matt, as you've been thinking about it, what you were a part of the very first one and part of the formation of our mission outreach we called Made for This. But when you think about outreach and connecting in your community, what's the first thing you're thinking about?
Yeah, I think kind of going back to a little bit of our conversation last week about like really knowing the needs of that community that you're in. Because I think that's that there's a difference between kind of going out into community and proclaiming this is who we are, and this is the benefit of knowing us, and this is why you should want to know us, and this is why you should want to come to our church on Sunday. And these are all the reasons. So like as you talk about those kind of two different models, it feels like really there could be a temptation to take the first one and just take that out to the community and be like, look at who we are, and look, come to our thing on Sundays because it's this thing. And then you kind of feel like, well, we're not in the church, so we are going out to the community. But I think one of the things that has really struck me over the course of the years that I feel like I've really appreciated is oftentimes it's not about us taking what we have and what we have kind of formulated and saying we're going to take this out and give it away, but more so creating those partnerships with people in the community to say, what's the need here? Like, and how can we meet that need? And whether that's, you know, a sports and arts camp or a preschool or, you know, whatever that might be. It's like, how do we still give away, you know, what God has gifted us with and this love and this desire to make him known, but how do we do that in a way that isn't overbearing and isn't in your face and is really from a place of service and humility and being able to help make the community a better place. And I think that's attracted a lot of people, and it's different than kind of what, even as I think, like when I was a kid, I remember going to a park where there was some Kool-Aid set up and there was like this like VBS type thing set up, and I was like, oh, I don't know, I wasn't
literal Kool-Aid. That's great.
Yes, it's great. I mean, it was delicious, but yeah, I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on. It was like it was clear the intention was like, come check out this thing that we do in this building on a Sunday. And that's okay. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. That's certainly a way probably people are getting connected. But I think like that's the mindset difference for me is like, when I think of Made for This, I don't think of like the metric being how many people come to our church. I think of like, hey, how many kids walk away at the end of the week knowing like somebody cares and that they actually had a, you know, not just had a good time, but they heard a message of hope that wasn't just, hey, come to our church. And that's some of the stuff that pops out to me.
Yeah. And there's lots of different ways to approach a missional outreach. And when we're talking about a missional outreach, what we're talking about is we start with the same question we used last week, which is, what is good news to our neighborhood? Until we can answer that question, we actually probably shouldn't be reaching out. And we should be starting with questions like, what do the kids around us need? What do families need? What do individuals, like in our community, housing is a huge issue. And so that's one of the places where we've leaned in and said, how do we help create housing opportunities for people who don't have housing? A lot of communities, childcare and affordable childcare is really good news because we live in a world where we don't have multi-generational families and help from extended family who are helping with kids. So a missional outreach is anytime you look and say, here's a need in my community, and here's how the kingdom of God brings relief or brings satisfaction to those deep desires in people's hearts and souls that they're looking for in God. And so that could be as simple as the church where our preschool meets. They have a food pantry. And this little food pantry, it's a shack in the back of this church parking lot. And every month, 300 families drive through and get a couple bags of groceries for free as a gift from this small little church that's in our community to their family by way of and by in partnership with the Idaho Food Bank, which is where most of our food production that gets, you know, handed out through the, it's like a federal, state, local, and then a nonprofit partner that are all partnering together to see that these 300 families don't go hungry. That's a missional outreach, and they do a beautiful job of praying for the families as they come through and getting to know the families so that they're, when they have needs, they know where to go and how to get those needs met. So that's one sort of missional outreach, looking at the key physical needs of families. Another could be, we have a friend who does like a literal carnival in their neighborhood. Like they're in a brand new neighborhood where no one knows each other. And so they said, our church is going to put on a carnival in this neighborhood park, and we're going to, you know, spend about $5,000. And then we're going to just tell all the people that were there so that they can connect with one another, because the need for community and for connection is an important piece. You look at the ancient world, and in the first century, it was easy to connect the gospel along these family and village kind of relationships. And now we have to kind of start further back and help people go, okay, how do we create these relational infrastructures so that the gospel can run along these extended family networks and these neighborhood networks? That's how the gospel works.
Yeah.
I was talking with a Hispanic friend who leads a church planting network, and he was telling me that, like, within their Hispanic community, it's really easy because they have people around the table eating food all the time.
Yeah.
And so they just need to make one little shift towards how do you have gospel and spiritual conversations, where I think in the Anglo community, we're so far back from community, actually creating community for people is a starting mm-hmm. point for the gospel. So yeah. that's kind of starting point. Matt, like let's that. Talk. Okay, oh, yeah, go for it.
I was going to say, I like that too, because I think, and this might seem really obvious, but like those events create those kind of soft edges that we talk about where like, there are, I have friends and coworkers who would not come, I mean, outside of maybe Easter, they wouldn't come to church if I was like, hey, I go to this church, do you want to come check it out? But like those friends definitely come to Made for this, because it's not, and I, you know, and even in the midst of it, we're not like hiding like, hey, we're a church that's putting this on, but it's like the purpose of this is for kids to come and have fun and to be engaged and to know that they matter and to have, you know, people invest in them and to learn these new skills. And yeah, we do a talk and so I'm sure we might talk about the nuts and bolts of that a little bit more, but like there's not this resistance to a carnival or to a camp or to you know, a Christmas, you know, party that there is to church. And there's some of those relationships have been really, we've been able to engage on a deeper level because of, hey, we're just kind of these normal people who want to make a difference in that, in our community. And you know, when parents pick up their kids, they talk to me about, oh, my kids just love Matty Buckets. And it's like, it's this great feeling, not because it's like, ooh, now maybe they'll come to our church, but it's like, oh, it means something to me that these kids value the relationship they have with this fictional character who pops up in their life once a year, and they look forward to it, and they look forward to coming back and inviting their friends because they know that it's a place where they can go and they can feel safe and have fun and all of these things. And like, if nothing else comes from it, like that in itself is the kingdom fruit just kind of popping up in our community. And that's really cool. And it's easier to invite, for most people to invite, you know, other friends and families to Made for this camp and see some success than it is sometimes to be like, hey, you want to come check out our church? So.
Well, I think you touched on something so important there, Matt, which is, when you're thinking about your neighborhood and what they need, you stop doing it for yourself. Because when you're a church planter, and you don't have people, you see people as a means to an end. A lot of times you'll say, I just need to gather people so that we then have a, you know, that critical mass on Sunday morning so it doesn't feel weird. And we have people who will give and we have people who will serve so that the church is formed. And church planters out there, here's the thing. God didn't tell you to go plant churches. Look at Matthew 28. Is Jesus' Great Commission go start churches? It's not. It's not about the church being planted or established. What God says is that he will build his church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. But he told us, make disciples and preach the gospel. Two really simple things. Make disciples, preach the gospel, go into all the world, and teach people the way of the kingdom. And the church itself will be built upon that disciple making. And a lot of outreach is actually pretty simply marketing to get people to consume goods and services in exchange for their engagement, for their time, and for their money. And we have to be really careful about the cynical ways that we use promotion to grow a church rather than to have a kingdom outcome. And so when you're doing anything, you have to purify your motives and say, this is for the people that we're trying to reach. And it's not to get them to go to my church. It's so that I can connect with them and love them, period. It's never for an ulterior motive to get them into church or even to get them to get saved. It's because you just love them and care for them. And you think that connection with God is something that will help them find life. And yeah. And once you've kind of removed yourself from saying it's about me and it's about our community and it's about us getting what we want, all of a sudden it sounds like much better news rather than something that was self-serving. Come to us and come be a part of our thing. And so that's kind of the first shift you have to make is from us to them, from what mm-hmm. serves us and how we can get people into what helps other people. So Matt, let's talk through. You were there from the very beginning. Before we had even done a soft launch or had a church service, we decided we were going to put on what has become Made for This Sports and Arts Camps. But I want to walk through. Do you remember those initial discussions that we had and like the why behind what we were doing?
No, I don't remember. I'm not going to try and like make stuff up here. Okay. I think, but one of the things that I was thinking back to is I remember the first sports and arts camp was, I was down in California for most of the time before it. And it was like during a week that I was back in town. And so like, I was just like, I wasn't a part of the planning for some of those initial ones. I mean, even before like I remember sitting around in a friend's backyard and talking through kind of like what the big picture things was like about meeting, you know, what we're talking about, meeting people where they're at and going into communities that already exist rather than trying to form this community around who we are. It's like, who are the people that, where are the groups and the types of people that we're already, members of those communities, and how do we take who we are to them? And so I think like, in that sense, it's probably maybe not the answer you're looking for, but like Made for That feels very much like that, where it was like, you know, I love Made for This camp because we get to hang out with the kids and we get to do that. But I also just like, I love the people we get to serve alongside. Like it's some of my best friends in the world putting on a 3-day party and playing sports and acting and doing drama. And it's like, that's like my ideal, like, way to spend 3 days. Uh-huh. And so like in that sense, it's a lot of fun because it's, you know, I think like going back to that, it's not like we're like trying to force ourselves into this box because it's what works. It's us allowing the types of people that we are and the types of, you know, the giftings that we have, because we've got some great administrators and we've got some great actors and we've got some okay football players and basketball players. And we have all these people who get to kind of go and just engage in the space that they are, and that's really fun. So but I'm guessing you had a different or another thought process behind that.
No, you hit on the key things that we were trying to talk about why we created something new, because you look at the well-worn paths and you say, okay, what's worked for other people? And a lot of churches have said Vacation Bible School is a key way to reach families. And I don't know the last time you were at a Vacation Bible School, but the last one that I was
at a park when I was 10, and I just told you about it. There's some good Kool-Aid. That's right. What stood out to me.
So that's your VBS. The average VBS you go to, and what you realize is that the majority of the people are there are Christians who are looking for free babysitting during the day, and you'll have families of Christians that will just basically drop their kids off and go kind of like every week. They're like, well, I'm at First Baptist this week, and then I'm at the Methodist Church next week. And then I'm at the Weird Fundamentalist the next week. But hey, it's at least 12 hours of free childcare every week is going to VBS. And Vacation Bible School, I think, sounded like really good news at a time where kids didn't know the Bible and didn't know how to read. But in a post-Christian world, I don't think Vacation Bible School sounds like something they want to do. Mostly because Bible itself doesn't make sense to the world. It's not God's word. It's a religious text that people use to hurt other people. That's how they think about what the Bible is. And so if you want to help people understand how valuable the Bible is, you actually have to start further back. There's a scale, I forgot the name of it, but it's basically an evangelism scale that goes from plus 10, which is somebody who's a committed follower of Jesus, all the way to negative 10, which is somebody who's a committed enemy to the kingdom of God. Okay, so that's like negative 10 to plus 10. In 1950, the average person was starting at a 3 or a 4, where they were positive towards religion, they were positive towards the Bible, they believed that it was valuable and that it was the Word of God. And so all you had to do was tell them what the Bible said so that they would believe in it and then become followers of Jesus. I think today we're starting at -3, -4, -5, where people are skeptical of religion, they're skeptical of church, they're skeptical of the Bible, and they see it as a manipulative tactic that religious people use to get people to do what they want. And so if you want to dispel that myth, Vacation Bible School is a word, VBS, is not going to help people who are far from God show up. So there's a barrier there. The other barrier is that a lot of times this happens at a church building, which is not a neutral space. It's enemy territory for someone who is not yet a part of the kingdom of God. And so to step into your church is a big gulf for a lot of people. And so as we were talking about it, what we realized is we want to create something in a third space. We wanted people to taste and experience the kingdom of God before they heard about it. And that's why we talk about it being a three-day party. We want to delight kids. We want to help them experience the beautiful, like it, kind of like the wedding feast of the Lamb sort of moment where they feel loved, cared for, known, experience God's loving community around them. So we said, okay, we're going to do it in a third space. And we chose a city park because it was close by and it was free and they couldn't kick you out, which we liked. Although we did get in trouble
for using sidewalk chalk.
Sidewalk chalk in city parks was considered graffiti, and they reached out to us to clean. You remember us mopping the concrete of the basketball court? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes. So third spaces, really important. I would say, if you want to reach lost people, you can't stay where you're at a church building. You've got to get out. So we started by saying we're going to go to a space that feels comfortable. We've since moved to a school because schools don't pay attention in the summer and they don't care about what happens. So schools
and they've got good fences.
They do have really good fences that help with security better than public parks. I will say that for sure. And so we started by asking, okay, where can we go that would be a safe space that people would engage with? We ask, what is good news to families? And I don't know if you've tried to sign your kids up for a summer sports camp lately, but I know that the soccer club that I coach for, a week-long soccer camp is like $480, $500 for a few hours a day for 5 days. And that does not sound like good news to my family. That sounds like threatening news to my family. Soccer camp sounds like a good thing, but the idea of being able to pay for something like that over and over throughout the summer is impossible. Yeah. And so we wanted something that was very low cost so that it was something that people could afford. We wanted it to be beautiful and be a taste of the kingdom of God. And we wanted it to also not be during the day, because during the day, families couldn't come together. It would just be kids with moms who stay home. Mm-hmm. And so we wanted daycare kids. We wanted the kids who go to the Boys and Girls Club during the day and their parents still don't want them home at night. We wanted those families to come. We wanted parents who were concerned about it to be able to come watch and be a part of it rather than sit on the sidelines. So because of that, we said we have to kind of create something new that will work as a missional outreach. And that's when what we call Made for This Sports and Arts Camp was born. And we're done for today. We don't want to go too long today. We're going to pick up here. We're going to keep recording, but for a second episode next week, in 2 weeks, we're going to talk more about Made for This. But if you want to look online, you can go to madeforthiscamp.com and see a little bit more. And we're going to give you on the next episode, a discount code for Church Planner Podcast for you to use it for only $10, like literally a huge, huge benefit to you as a listener. So we'll see you again. I'm going to do the closings so Matt can get used to it again. Did you practice?
Every week my goal is to get a little closer, but I'm going to
go for it.
I know it's not right. I know it's not right, okay, but it's getting better. If you want to reach the people that nobody else is reaching, you have to go to the places that no one else is going. And then something else. Now, I'll get it on the next one.
And the things no one else is doing.
That's what I was going to say. That's what I was going to say, but I felt like
that sounds a little dirty. I agree. Like, it's a little weird. I'll do the things no one else is willing to do.
That sounds exactly like outreach.
That is missional outreach. I'll do whatever it takes. Okay, right. Thanks for being with us, friends. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This episode was brought to you by Church Web Builder. If you've been meaning to scrap your terrible WordPress church website, or you just need to actually sit down and make your church plant's website, let this be a sign to you. With Church Web Builder's library of church-specific templates and integrations, and the included all-in-one marketing and communication platform, a beautiful new website is literally sitting there waiting for you to take it. Go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER at checkout. You'll get 50% off your first year. Yes, 50. 50% off your entire first year. Again, go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER. For more from the Church Planter Podcast, hit us up on Instagram and Facebook at Church Planter Podcast and on Twitter at CPlanterMag. We'd love to connect. See you next time.